Hello and welcome to another episode of the Stephen Reed podcast. On today's episode, we have my good friend Matt talking to us about football, big life decisions, and social media. I hope you enjoy. Matthew.
Hi.
So, here today with my good friend Matthew Shales.
That's me.
At Shales12 on Insta.
Yep. Thanks for that.
This is only the second official guest I've had on the podcast, if you exclude Will, obviously.
Chubs don't count.
He doesn't, though. And it's good to have you here. This is the first time we've had a guest in our house to record a podcast, because the last one we were up in Manchester. So it's nice to actually get a feel of what it's like in this setup.
It's good to be here, Stephen.
Awesome. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Just standard, really.
Yeah. standard is good.
Yeah.
So I thought we'd start off by talking about a topic that you're quite well versed in. So I wanted to get your thoughts on Brexit.
Yeah. No chance.
Matt specifically told me right before the podcast started that he specifically didn't want to talk about politics. So I thought we'd have a whole podcast episode about Brexit.
Don't really follow it.
For those of you who are listening in the future, which is all of you, just to give this podcast a bit of context, we're currently in the midst of the group stages of the World Cup, aren't we?
Correct.
And we've only actually had first game of each?
No, because Spain and Iran are about to place the second group game in Group B.
Okay, very good. So Matt is quite well known in our friendship group for being the man you go to if you want any football statistic. He's incredible and knows everything about football.
I do like my football.
Which is, it always amazes me how much you know about the teams and that.
It's what I do.
So because I know a lot less about football than you, I'm quite interested to find out what your World Cup predictions are. So
nothing has happened so far.
Really?
Well, I didn't expect Mexico beat Germany. Didn't see that coming.
No, to be fair.
Didn't see Iceland drawing with Argentina.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Messi missed the penalty. It's been a bit of upset so far already. It's nice to see.
One thing you could have predicted, though, was England were going to perform fairly mediocre.
I thought they were pretty. I thought they were right.
You reckon?
They were too bad. I mean, you probably got to watch more of it than I did, because I was working whilst watching it.
Yeah. Where do you work, Matt?
The Cottage Inn of Bucklebury. Yeah. Great old little pub.
There's a little bit of a cheeky cheeky promotion there.
It's a good little place.
But who do you think is going to win the World Cup 2018?
If you'd have asked me before the World Cup, I would have said Germany.
You reckon?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think it's going to be close. I still think Germany got me up there. Germany, Brazil, Spain, I suppose, the ones that everyone would say.
Yeah. Who's, any underdogs that you reckon they...
Well, I mean, I've got to say Sweden because of my sweepstake, but that's not going to happen. 3 points after one game, though, so we can dream.
Nice. Who did they beat?
God, now you put me on the spot. That's good. I know all my football stats and I can't think about that.
Wow. I put the pressure on you, in fairness.
I need to score a penalty, if that helps.
Okay.
Through VAR.
Yeah. But, so are your hopes high for your sweepstake?
No, not a chance.
I'm in a sweepstake with Will and a bunch of his family and friends. I'd quite like to get your thoughts on who I've got. So I picked Peru.
Oh, yep.
What are the chances that my £5 stake is going to come back and reward me?
I mean, you probably got more of a chance than Sweden.
You think?
I don't even know. I think we're all pretty in the dirt if you haven't got the top ones.
Yeah, but, that's it.
We can all dream. We can all dream.
I was looking at some of the fixtures the other day and to try and find out what, like, who was going to be the best fixture. And obviously, there's pretty big games. Portugal and Sweden, Spain were one of them.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And it did turn out to be a great match. But one that stuck out to me was Poland and Senegal. Because you'd never see those two teams or those two countries meet, and like for any other occasion, would you?
That's why it's the best competition in the world.
The best that's a big statement.
Well, true statement, I'd say.
Any other big competitions that you like to look out for?
Well, we're talking sports wise, I guess, aren't we?
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd say Eurovision, obviously.
Well, there you go.
No, I mean, just Euros is probably the other big one, but that's just because it's probably more competitive in the World Cup, I'd say, because it's just more concentrated good teams.
Still football, though.
Still football, yeah. I mean, I like Rugby World Cups. That's coming up, isn't it? Next year in Japan.
In Japan?
Yeah.
Oh, wicked.
This is where I got it wrong, you watch. But I'm pretty confident it's Japan. That's always a good one. I like international rugby.
Yeah.
Just any international competition, really.
I suppose so.
Olympics, obviously.
Which do you prefer, Olympics or Winter Olympics?
I love both. I love the winter one because you get to see more things that you... I just get obsessed with curling. I always get obsessed with the curling.
Same, man. Absolutely love that.
It's probably boring to most people, but I get so into it.
What is it, though, about it I don't even know. What's interesting about curling?
I think it's just, I don't know, tactics?
Yeah?
I don't know.
It's surprisingly intense for a slow sport, I find.
I agree.
It reminds me, it's like a bit like darts, isn't it? Or bowls or something like that. You have to be really precise. But there's no other sport where you have anything like sweeping. I think that's something that interests me because it's a completely different dynamic that you wouldn't get in any other sport.
Mm. It's always funny when working like at work, it's quite a lot of the older generation. And they always make the jokes that the women should be better than the men because of the sweeping.
Ooh.
It's always quite controversial.
We're not sexist here on this podcast, though.
No, I'm not.
What about Eurovision then? You mentioned that. That's fairly recent, isn't it?
Go on, Israel.
Yeah. Yeah, our friend Guy's actually invited us out to Israel next year, hasn't he?
We should actually do it.
I think so.
It was 3 years ago. Next week we were out there 3 years ago.
Gosh.
I know, time's gone quick.
Wow. So, just to give a bit of context, 3 years ago while we were... Well, at uni, wasn't it? The first year we were organising.
Well, I was in my gap year and Guy was in his gap year as well.
Okay. So before you'd gone to uni then and before Guy had gone, our mate Guy had gone to stay in a kibbutz in Israel. So we decided to go on our very first lads holiday, believe it or not, over to Israel, which was interesting. What was your highlight of that trip?
Probably just the amount of jokes that we made about each other. Mainly me, but and you. That was a good one from you.
Yeah,
but no, I think it was just spending time with you lot, really. It was just a good cultural differences as well. It's nice to experience a lot of different things. Food was a big one. We did love the food.
Oh, my word.
Falafels.
I literally ate falafel and hummus every single day while I was there.
Guy's babushka as well.
We stayed with Guy's Nana while we were out there, and she's Russian. And my word, we went twice, did we?
Yeah, we stayed there one night while we were on our way to Jerusalem and on the way back.
Both times she filled us up with food.
We had schnitzel, I can't remember what you had.
I had schnitzel as well.
Yeah, you had
veggie schnitzel. That was good.
That was good.
I remember her, like, didn't she bring out a cake as well at the end? Like, once we thought all the food had gone and we were full to the brim.
That being a banging cake.
She, like, walks out with this, like, big cake that she expects us to eat.
We didn't.
No. I'm not sure how we actually sort of got to sleep that night with all the food in our bellies, but it was a good trip.
Yeah, it was.
My highlight of that trip, personally, was going to the Dead Sea.
That whole day.
I was going to say the whole day there was awesome.
Well, because we did that 3 a.m. hike up Masada.
Yeah, that's the one.
To watch the sunrise, which was an experience in itself. That was amazing.
Incredible.
Shame about the company I had, but apart from that. Yeah.
It was so much fun, that though.
That was, yeah. Tiring because of the hike, but then the Dead Sea, nice and relaxing.
Yeah. It's such a strange experience as well, going into water, and just when you lean back, your legs just like pop up in front of you.
It was very hot, so we just had to remember the creme.
we were bobbing around in the middle of this sea or lake. I'm not sure. Is it a lake?
I mean, it's the Dead Sea, Stephen.
Well, I know, but I don't know whether it actually connects into the ocean.
That is a question I cannot answer.
My geography is not that strong in that area, but we were bobbing around in the Dead Sea, and our mate Lawrence, bless him, he's incredibly ginger and pale, and he burns fairly easily, and given his skin tone, but this Russian woman, or I don't know where she's from, to be honest, but I can only imagine she's somewhere like that. She's sort of bobbing along up to us. She looks about 80, and she goes up to Lawrence, and she just points and strokes her forearm and points at Lawrence and goes, creme, creme.
Yeah, that was rather entertaining.
And we've reminded him of it ever since.
We have indeed. Can't forget it.
No. It was good though. It was nice to, as you say, it was nice to spend time with you guys out in a foreign country and experience some different culture, really, because I think, although we've both done a fair bit of travelling in Europe, I think you'd probably agree when I say that most of Europe is fairly similar now in terms of culture. It's historically very different and diverse, but most, you know, there's a McDonald's wherever you go. And
it was definitely different to anywhere else I've been, for in sure. A good way.
For sure. Yeah, I remember... I'd very quickly realised how little I knew about Israel when we got on the plane I think we were in Heathrow, were we? And
I was waiting for this.
We got on the plane and we were surrounded by Orthodox Jews. I'd never even seen an Orthodox Jew in person before. The closest I'd got is our mate Guy, who is not an Orthodox Jew by any stretch of the imagination. And so they've all got these hats on and the curly hair, and I had no idea what... I turned around to the lads and I was like, boys, are these all rabbis?
I was hoping you were going to bring that up.
And that was rather embarrassing when I found out that I was completely incorrect. But and again, I've been reminded of that ever since.
Every day.
I just wanted to go back to what you were saying earlier, though. I know it's a bit of a switch up, but... One of the things that I've enjoyed spending time with you doing is playing sports. And we used to play squash together back in sixth form.
Played a lot.
And this was one of the things that we both sort of had in common, is just sort of having a mutual enjoyment of being active and being competitive. And that's something that's massively... stuck around.
It has, me and you especially.
What's your favourite competition that we've played against each other in? Like, obviously they're all friendly, right? But we still managed to make it into a competition, right?
I mean, I'll have to bring up the ping pong where I did beat you 11-0. Was a personal...
Are you sure you beat me 11-0?
Definitely beat you 11-0, because then you were determined to never lose again.
Did I not still come back and beat you afterwards, though?
You probably did a few days later, but I still beat you 11-0, and that will forever...
Have you still got that ping pong table?
I do indeed.
That's something we should definitely get out this year.
Well, I do need to get out, yeah.
We've had some good times playing that ping pong table at your dad's house, and we've gone and played for hours and hours.
I always
win. On this table, haven't we? No. Well, in fairness, you're the one with the table, so you get to practice more often and keep your skills.
Here's
up.
The competitive bit coming out.
What
squash is always good, because it was always, for me, it was always the hardest one, because you are better than me at squash. So it was always when I did beat you on the rare occasion, it was always meant more to me than most things.
Yeah, definitely.
Apart from that, I suppose FIFA is a big one.
Yeah.
No, it's not like personal exercise, but that was always very competitive.
We've had a few FIFA tournaments, haven't we?
Seeing as the rest of our friends are quite rubbish.
Well,
not mentioning Chubbs here. But.
I don't know about that anymore, though. Seeing as now everyone's gone to uni and blooming played on FIFA like for hours and hours and hours. I reckon we should have another FIFA tournament. I reckon we could probably surprise you. Guy and Will are the underdogs.
Just don't let them play together.
But I think they're the dark horse because honestly, the pair of them, I think they've had a few too many hours playing that at uni. He's looking all. He doesn't know what we're talking about. No,
he was either play FIFA or eat pies for Will.
So
love you really.
we've all been to uni, right, Matt?
Well, say that I did like what a year.
Well, this is what I was going to come on to. This wasn't a dig or a snide comment at all. I wanted to dig in a little bit into your time at uni. Can you tell us a little bit about where you went to do? And
so after the year I had out, because I didn't apply for uni instantly after school like the rest of you did, because I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Eventually decided on sticking with what was my passion at the time in photography. So I looked around, applied for, I think, five, I think I applied for in the end.
Yeah.
Got a few interviews and went down to Swansea, the beautiful land of Wales. Had the interview, went for an open, well, I did an open day, went for an interview, got my place, as well as a place down in Brighton. I had an interview down at Falmouth as well, which I'm annoyed I didn't follow up. But yeah, got the exception at Swansea and decided to go for it. Moved down there, well, what would have been start of your second year. Settled in pretty nicely, found myself a nice little place, lived with some lovely, friendly people, mm-hmm. made some good friends. Cracked on with the course, started off well. But, you know, after a while, I wasn't taking the photos that I wanted to do. I was sort of doing what the lecturers wanted. I think to start with, I was pretty happy just doing that, just plodding along, like settling down, living on my own, making new friends, nightlife, bit of fun that we all do at uni.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, after a while, I sort of wasn't ready to keep putting up with doing what I was told and wanted to do, you know, take my own photos that I wanted to do. Still linking back to the overall theme of the project.
Okay. So are we talking about then like assignments and things, or are we just talking the general gist of the course?
So we had different assignments. We had like different objectives to try and match with our photos. So I think we had a little bit of free rein, and I sort of went down the route of isolation through like technology.
Yeah.
And the photos that I wanted to take were nothing to what I came out with. I ended up just taking pictures of my housemates on a sofa, to be honest with you.
Right.
And it wasn't enjoyable for myself. I didn't enjoy it. And I spoke to the lecturer about it, my tutor, sat down and talked to him what I was unhappy about and what I wanted to do. You know, we sort of came to an agreement that next project we'd have a sit down straight away and I discussed what I wanted to take photos of. Came to the next project and that never happened. And I kept trying to meet up with him and talk about it, and it was just do this, didn't get what I wanted to do. And
okay,
quite frankly, I was sick of it. And my grades did start falling. I was doing quite well, but dropped down a little bit because I wasn't enjoying it. And I wasn't getting things in on time because I didn't have the drive and the passion to do it.
Mm.
And I decided that I was just making myself miserable.
Right.
So I moved back to Thatcham.
Okay. So did you finish the whole year then?
Not quite, no. I didn't finish the last assignment.
Okay.
But apart from that, yeah, did all of it.
How was making that decision for you? When you were going through that process of trying to weigh up the pros and cons and trying to decide whether you wanted to stick it out or not?
It was tough, you know. It was a big decision for me to move, like it is for anyone, to move away in the first place and sort of head in a certain direction, to turn back on that was difficult. I definitely feel like it was the right decision for me, looking back on it. It's been, what, 2 years now?
Yeah.
It was definitely the right decision for me. I mean, to be honest, I haven't picked a camera up since uni, so.
Wow.
I know. Yeah, so I definitely feel like it was the right thing for me. I feel like I did the right thing. It was hard at the time, you know, leaving all my friends. I was enjoying the social life of it all. It was just, I wasn't there for the social life. Like, that's not the only reason I was there, and I couldn't stick around just for that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad that you've reflected on that and you know that it's definitely the right decision. I had no idea that you'd sort of fallen so much out of touch with photography since you'd finished.
Yeah, just sort of, I haven't had the passion for it. I keep trying, you know, I would like to one day, but I'm not going to force it. I feel like if I force it, I'll just fall out even more with it, if that's possible.
Right.
You know, I've still got my camera, I've still got everything that I would need to get back into it. It's just waiting for the right time, I guess.
Yeah. So what, other than what you've just explained, what was it that happened over that year that made you fall out of touch and out of passion for photography so much?
It's a good question, actually. I think it was just the fact that every time I picked up a camera, it was correlating to not enjoying it. You know, I wasn't enjoying taking photos. I was dreading picking up the camera because I just didn't want to do it. And I feel like that's still around a little bit, which is a shame because I did enjoy it. But, you know, hopefully that will, in time, that will go and I'll enjoy it again.
For sure. Yeah, it's a shame, really. From what you said, it sounds like you've had that connection then, you'd built up that connection between, like, taking photographs and the displeasure that you got from doing it, which is a shame that it broke your previous passion and hobby for it. You mentioned earlier that you chose one of your topics or pictures that you chose was, was it social media?
It's like, and isolation through like technology and social media.
Okay. Can you explain why you decided to choose that?
It was, so obviously with like photography and stuff throughout education, you have to like do research into other photographers, and to be honest, I can't remember the name of him, but I did find this photographer that work did inspire me, and I really liked it, and that's sort of where I got the idea from. And the whole research into it was quite interesting, and you know, finding out people's stories, and just I sort of opened my eyes up. So when you're looking around, the amount of people that are just on their phones and not talking to people, and you know, people that might be sat at a dinner table, if you go out for dinner and there's two people that are sat across the table but they're on their phones.
Yeah.
And I got really into it. I loved that sort of side of it, but I mean, in my eyes, I would have been out there taking photos of those sorts of things. Instead, I was sat in my kitchen taking pictures of my housemates on a sofa.
Okay. That's a good observation. Unfortunately, in the last 3-4 years, is it now, since you were at uni?
It would have been... Yeah, well, I would have just finished now, so 3 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's mad. In the last 3 years... That issue, I feel, has not got any better. If anything, it's probably only got worse, really. Has your relationship with technology and social media changed at all since you'd done that project?
I'd like to think I'm not bad on my phone anyway. You know, I'm a much person. I'd rather meet up with someone than, you know, talk on a phone. I'm definitely more of a go out and talk to people than just sit at home on my own.
Yeah.
I know I've probably hypocritical because I've been like that in the past, but it's definitely a thing that I prefer, just being out there and being face to face.
Definitely. I've always felt that although social media is there to connect us together and to form these sort of social groups and these bonds between people, and it has a really, really... good value in connecting people who are far away and don't get to see each other often, or distant friends that, you know, haven't connected for such a long time. But that really pales in significance compared to how much it really breaks up the connection between people who are close together.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It's great, like, to see what other people are up to. Like, you know, we people that we might have talked to might be halfway around the world and we had no idea about it. You know, siblings being, I know my sister went to Thailand, New Zealand. I know Will's sister is doing a similar sort of thing. And it's great to see what they're doing. Great to see photos and everything. But like you said, you know, we could be 10-minute walk away from each other and we talk on social media, but not see each other for a whole week. And
definitely.
It doesn't help. I mean, if we didn't have phones and stuff, we just go around knocking each other's door.
Yeah.
Have a little chat, catch up. But instead, we just do it through our phones now.
Yeah. Although, I'd say we're pretty good as a friendship group on the whole for being aware of that and still making a big conscious effort to go out and see each other. And as well, we still do spend a lot of time outdoors. I think it'd be easy enough for us to go inside and, you know, meet up indoors all the time. But one of the things that we all love doing is going for a walk, or we, you know, in the past we've gone for a kickabout, and that's something that I love doing. And now it's summer, I'm hoping that we can kind of get outdoors and do a bit more of that and stuff. So yeah, I'm really, really grateful that we're still sort of fighting against that sort of means of communicating and still making the efforts to go out and see each other in person. I think we've both changed our ways that we've used social media in the past. I know at one stage I got rid of Facebook completely and wasn't on it for a year or two. And that was interesting because that was the first year of uni, and a lot of people sort of mentioned that it might be good to be on Facebook while you get there and you get to meet new people and then connect with them. So that was something I experimented with. Have you ever had a blitz and got rid of any social media or anything like that in the past?
Yeah, I've got rid of like Facebook before, but I don't really use a huge amount of social media. I have a lot of accounts. Like, we have accounts on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that, but you don't see me posting on them ever. I just sort of use them if I'm like bored or I've got 5 minutes to waste. But apart from that, no, I never really go on them, just because I'd like to do more things today, like going out, go for a walk. Like you said, one thing we do enjoy doing, I'd much rather do activities and sit on them. So I definitely have gone off social media. I definitely use it a hell of a lot less than I used to when I was younger and when it was new and it was sort of different for us and we wanted to use it. So I've definitely got a lot better as time's gone on. I'd like to think that I use it a good amount, I suppose. I'm not one of these people that's on it 24/7 and my whole life isn't all over online.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a big thing for me.
There's a lot of people that live, I feel it's almost like in a bubble really, while they're, you know, while they're surrounding themselves by social media and living for the likes, and kind of that's a completely different way of life that I think the way we use social media now. You're right in saying that actually I think most of us don't actually use those platforms to share our lives anymore. It's more of a digesting other people's lives and experiences. And we still put our highlights on the internet, photos and a couple of life events and things like that. I find now actually whenever something exciting or a big achievement in my life happens, it's usually my mum that's posting it on Facebook and tagging me in it. So I don't even have to bother with that anymore, which is good. But yeah, I think it's interesting how our relationship to social media sort of keeps changing as it changes over time. Speaking of achievements though, I'm interested to find out what is your proudest or greatest achievement to date? Is there anything that springs to mind?
It's a good question. I don't really know. I suppose one thing that I was quite proud of back in what must have been year 12, I did one thing that's got quite popular now. It wasn't very well known when I was a kid. It was the NCS, National Citizenship Service.
Oh yeah, I remember.
I went away, I did a week away, sort of team building, went to like a outdoor activities centre, which was with a bunch of strangers who I'd never met before, which is a great experience. You know, it's great to meet new people and it's great to bond with people. So that was a great experience. You know, second week came back, went camping for a week with the same people. And with the whole objective, the 2 weeks after that, we were to do a fundraising, something to raise money for a charity that we wanted to do. So the group I had, we decided to do a kids play day sort of thing over in Victoria Park. Did a few little races, sold some old video games and DVDs, and had a little raffle, loads of little things like that. I think we raised about £460.
Awesome.
Which was we were really proud of it for having, a week to plan it, or 2 weeks to plan it and execute it.
That was crazy.
Yeah, we were quite proud of that.
So in that time, you'd managed to go, and I assume you, before that, you didn't have the ground where you were going to go and we had
absolutely nothing. You know, we had a little bit of funding from ourselves, but apart from that, we had to go and, you know, find somewhere to do it, find all the equipment to do it with, which was really good for us. It was a really good experience because we had no help from others. It was all the same age group, which was a great experience for us all. And it was great to work in a team, especially if people you've only known for a few weeks, which I think made it all the more satisfying and more a bigger achievement, I guess.
Definitely. What was the hardest thing you came up against then when you were trying to do that?
I think it's working as a team was probably the hard bit, because we've all got different personalities, all trying to get to know each other still, and all trying to work out where each people's strengths are. I can be quite a bossy person, and I like to
really?
I like to lead things sometimes. I know some people find that hard to believe, but
yeah, I do. Actually.
I do like to be at the front of things, so I do. I did take a little bit of leadership through it.
That's good. I never had you down as a bossy person, to be honest.
Well, in a professional situation, I can be.
I guess we've never had to be in that situation together, really.
No, we haven't. No. So always friendly. And
was there anything you learned about yourself that surprised you when you were doing that?
Probably the fact that I can organise a group of annoying teenagers, such as myself. Yeah, I don't know. I think I probably surprised myself a little bit of how well we did, actually, and how well organised it was. And it was still fun all 4 weeks that it was.
Brilliant.
So yeah, I think, you know, it was quite good for myself to do, and I'm really proud that I did it. And it's something I'd definitely recommend to anyone else.
Awesome. Do you think, has that impacted on anything, you know, since then in a positive way?
I think it probably proved to me that I can do those sorts of things, and that the doubt that was probably once in my head sort of isn't as strong as it used to be. It was definitely good for myself. Proved that I can do things on my own. Well, not on my own, but I can organise things if I needed to.
Awesome. I know you said you, obviously, you've dropped out of uni, and you made a big decision there to swap your, you know, completely go in a different direction with your life. Is there any advice that you'd give yourself if you were to go back, say maybe five years, say when we were in sixth form and we were all still trying to have an idea of what we wanted to do and where we were going with life? If you could go back now, would you? What advice would you give yourself?
I don't regret leaving uni. I wouldn't change that. You know, I did what I wanted to do, and I made the right decisions for myself. I think I'd just say to myself, you know, if I want to do it, do it. I was always a bit hesitant to do things that I wanted to do, not thinking it was the right thing. I was always quite judgmental myself, because I had my older sister always seemed to excel in things, and I always judged myself on her, which was wrong.
Right.
And it's something that did hold me back probably a little bit, but I've moved on from that. I think I just tell myself that, you know, I'm my own person, and I've got to do what I want to do at the end of the day.
That's awesome. I think we all get stuck in that comparison sort of mindset, don't we, where we look at how well other people do and think that we should be doing something similar, or that we should be doing better than we are, or we should look better, or you know, earn more money than we are, or we should be physically fitter because other people are doing these things, right? I've had a bit of a turnaround in my mindset really in really recently in terms of that, when talking about success. And actually a lot of people our age are very success minded and want to achieve big things in their careers and obviously earn lots of money, and they have their whole life mapped out ahead of them and where they want to be. And I've really sort of taken a U-turn on what I was thinking about success meant previously, because we know that these things that everyone strives towards doesn't necessarily make us happy. It's common knowledge that money and a big house and a big car and these things don't bring us any significant meaning or happiness or joy to our life necessarily, or you know, any meaningful long-term happiness. With that in mind, before I give you my sort of interpretation of what success is, I'm curious to find out how you would define success, or what you think success means to you.
I'd definitely say happiness is the biggest one. I mean, I work in my little village pub, not on a huge wage. I mean, money isn't a key thing for me. You know, I know that money would be great to have, but at the end of the day, I know for a fact it's not what makes me happy.
Right.
Now, I don't get to see probably you lot as much as I'd like to with my job at the moment, but I still do see a lot, and that's what makes me happy. And the job as well. You know, a lot of people have said like, oh, what are you going to do? You can't work here for the rest of your life. I'm not planning on staying there, but for now it makes me happy. And yeah, you know, it's money as well. But the main thing is that I found a job at the moment that I love. I know a lot of people wouldn't love the job that I'm doing. Talking to different people each day might not be exactly ideal for some people, but it's what I enjoy. So I think success is definitely a personal thing. You know, some people would say, you know, they're doing really well because they're earning loads of money, but are they happy? And for me, it's the happiness, which is why, you know, I'm pretty happy in the job that I'm in at the moment. I'm enjoying it. I get to see my friends still. I enjoy the people I work with. So for me, it's definitely happiness.
Yeah, and I wonder how many successful people can say that about their lives at the moment, that they get on with the people they work with, and that they get to see enough of their friends, and that they're genuinely happy in the job that they do, and they enjoy meeting these people. I would be curious to find out actually how many people we look up to as successful feel that they have those things in their life. And my hypothesis is that these people probably, you know, a surprising amount wouldn't be able to say those things, which would be sad if it was true. I think in life we look up to people with status and see them as being successful. You know, we see someone who has risen up through promotions and is now in charge of lots of other people and has importance. We see them as successful, and I still do it. And I think it's just ground into us from a very early age in the Western society, at least, that if someone has done really well and is earning loads and they have a nice car and they have status in society, that is success. And there's lots of successful people, I think, that are doing it from a meaningful position, so that they have created charities and they have created non-for-profit organizations, and they're connecting people and doing good in the community. But I think I've changed my idea of success around a little bit in terms of where I'm heading, because I don't really want those things in my life, and I know for a fact that they won't bring me happiness. Much like yourself, you know, at the moment, I'm just glad to be happy and enjoying what I'm doing and being with the people I work with, and get to see plenty of my friends and things like that. And my new interpretation of success is very much what you're doing at the moment. And so I really respect your, you know, what, you know, your happiness and your enjoyment that you're getting from your work at the moment. And I think it's great, and that you're not listening to the pressure of the outside world to go and do something bigger or better or earn more money, because that's not what it's about. And I think I've decided that really the way I want to measure my success is the amount of lives that you touch in a positive way. And I think that can come in any description or any package. And what you're doing by being in the pub and chatting to people, making people laugh and spend, you know, connecting with people face to face, I think that for me is success, really. I don't know what you have to say about my interpretation.
Well, I'm just curious as to what's made that change. You said you took a U-turn. So I'm just curious as to what prompted that U-turn. If there is, other than it might not be anything, I was just wondering if there was.
Well, I think it was reflecting on what my life choices are. The fact that I don't want to go down those lines yet. When I meet someone and they introduce themselves as this type of person, or they are that, or I look at someone on TV and I know that how well they're doing, or listen to someone on a podcast who's a CEO and this person, and you know they've released this many books that have done really well, and a lot of it is about status and importance, and I do look up to them and see them as successful. So there's almost a disconnect there between it's a disconnect between what I know is success to me, and how I'm actually acting and treating success in the real life. So, yeah, I think we'd all be a lot happier if we just had a little bit of a U-turn from those things and aim for something like being happy in our jobs. I think that would be great, really. On that note, I'm wondering what you would do if you had the choice, if money was no object. What direction would you go with in your life?
I think I just do a lot of traveling and volunteering. You know, I agree with what you said. You know, touching people in the world and like trying to make an impact is big. I've gone through a lot in my young life, I'd say already, to understand that, you know, just talking to people is a massive help. And I think it's one thing that I do enjoy my job is that I can talk to people. I might not make an impact to them, but who knows, I might do. But no, if money was no object, I'd definitely do a bit of travelling, bit volunteering around there, like, you know, helping in schools, helping out, doing anything really. I'd love to go and experience different cultures and understand different ways of life for different people. You know, I was chatting to one of the locals at work, a really nice girl called Dave. He went out to the Gambia for quite a while. And, you know, we were chatting recently about sort of their way of life, especially while being both big football fans. We were chatting about the football because he was messaging his friend from the Gambia and how we're all just taking for granted the fact we can watch every game of the World Cup on TV, but they're having to listen to the odd game here or there. I mean, they're supporting Senegal because it's the country that surrounds them. They're having to listen to it on the radio. They've got no TVs. They've got no way of watching it. And I'd love to go out and experience those sort of environments and just help out any way in which I could. And that'd be one thing I'd love to do if there was nothing stopping me, really.
That's wicked. You've done a fair bit of travelling already, and I knew it's a passion of yours. I didn't realise you quite wanted to go and do that kind of work around. What is it that draws you to doing that kind of volunteering then?
Well, I think the travelling that I've done is a lot around, like, so it's a lot around Europe, it's a lot around like wealthy places, you know. I've done a lot of those things, but I've never really gone out and seen those places. I think it's just, I mean, we're very lucky in the way we are, you know, born in this place in England and what we have and stuff. And now I feel like we might have taken it for granted over the years, but we didn't appreciate the things. And I'd love to just give it back to, well, not give it back, but go and see what I could do to other people to try and make them happy. And I think it'd be a big thing for me, you know, go out and see what little other people have would make me appreciate the things I have more.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's just a thing I've always sort of had my eye on and always would love to do.
Brilliant. And what would you say you're grateful for at the moment?
I think just what we have at our disposal, you know, if we need food, we just pop around the corner, get whatever we want. You know, we got clean water from the tap. Anything that we really want, we can have. Do you know what I mean? I mean, obviously money is an issue with some things, but we're all pretty lucky that we work and we do earn money and that we can get the things we want or do the things we want. You know, a lot of people don't have that. They don't have that sort of at their exposure. I think it'd be a different way of seeing life, and it would really make me appreciate just popping round to the local co-op just to grab a meal deal or whatever it is that I'm doing.
Definitely. I'm sure that would leave a lasting impact on you. And although we know in moments like this, when we actually think about it, we know how lucky we are and that we should be more grateful for the simple things, like you say, having food and having the luxuries that we've got around us, but also the basic necessities like running water and toilets and sanitation and a cooker and all these things. I'm sure that would be a wicked experience to remember that a lot more truthfully, you know, to actually live that more rather than just think about it every so often. Have you done some volunteering in the past?
Not a huge amount. I helped out bits and bobs at school, not as much as I'd like to. Helped out with like younger sports teams, which it's not everyone's first thought of volunteering. But, not volunteering that I'd like to do.
Okay. You're right though, because you actually did spend many, many hours of your own time helping out with the sports teams, and not just that, it was drama as well that you did, wasn't it?
That was my own choice as well. Yeah, just sort of things that I enjoyed doing that helped me out with, like, I mean, drama I did because of my confidence. I was always quite shy and stuff, and I chose to do drama to build it up, and it helped me out massively, and I'd love to just help the other kids out doing the same sort of thing. I love sport. I always have loved sports. That was always a thing that I just wanted to do, and that was sort of one thing I thought I'd enjoy doing and stuff. But the problem is I've always worked a lot as well. You know, I started working when I was 15, so I spent most of my free time just doing that.
Yeah.
And probably not doing other more useful things like volunteering.
I think one of your biggest assets is that you are a grafter. You do work hard in whatever you do, really. So I think that's definitely something that you've got to give to wherever you go. And if you go and volunteer, and you've already mentioned that you're a good organizer and things like that, so it'd be cool to get you involved in doing some stuff like that across wherever, really, may it be this country or abroad. Is there someone that's inspired you to do that, or is this something that you've wanted to do?
I think
off your own back.
I think it's just, like, you know, hearing stories from other people, the sort of places they've been and the people they've seen. Like, I mean, my sister, she went to Thailand. She helped out in a school,
right?
And just seeing the photos from that, you know, how much they love just having someone else there and what she gained from it. I'd love to do a similar sort of thing, you know, not exactly the same, but going out, whatever it may be, wherever it may be, just as long as I got to see the smile on people, you know, help them out would mean the world to me.
That's wicked. That's wicked. Speaking of people who inspire you, I'm interested to know one famous person and one non-famous person that inspires you.
As cliche as it is, my dad would be one. I mean, probably from the whole grafting point of view, you know, he's always worked hard and given everything to me and my sister, and it's always, you know, inspired me to just crack on and appreciate the little things. Famous is it's a difficult one, actually. I'm not really too sure. I suppose, again, being a sportsman would probably be David Beckham. Really? Not just in what he did football-wise, but he's massive on charities, helped big time with getting the Olympics here in London, setting up his own football team up in Miami. Just all the sort of little things that he does sort of shows me that, you know, I mean, he played at PSG and he was on a big wage, but he didn't take it. Every match fee he got went straight to charity.
I did not know that. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's just, you know, he's using his position and the wealth from which is in his industry at the time to touch and help others, which I always find really inspiring.
Definitely. That's a really good example of someone who, you know, who completely changes their idea of what they're there to do and to give so much more. Thankfully they have, because they can have a much bigger impact on the world than most people can, really. And a lot of people would give so much to be in their position. I think it's nice to know that they're giving something back. Are there any other footballers that, you know, that do something like that?
I mean, I'm sure there is a lot of others that like do a lot of volunteering. Didier Drogba would be one. I mean, I'm a big Chelsea fan, so he's always up there. But he's got a big foundation out in the Ivory Coast where he's from. You know, he set up a lot of big things, you know, hospitals and the first hospital in his little village, in his local village, all girls schools. He's done loads of stuff around there. I suppose another big one is Mo Salah for Liverpool.
Okay.
Featured in a drug, like a rehabilitation centre on Egyptian TV. And, you know, people going into rehabilitation centres increased hugely just from that one advert because of the position they hold in their country. You know, they're such an idol and they're using that status for such good things. It's really inspirational for most people, even if you're not a sports fan like me. Oh, I am a sports fan. But yeah, even if you're not, it's still quite inspirational, I feel.
Definitely. Funnily enough, I'm nowhere near as big a sports or football fan as you are. Mo Salah is actually someone that jumps out at me as someone that I find fairly inspiring because of how humble he is. Considering he's he had one of the best seasons of any footballer ever, really, in the Premier League. And yet, He stayed humble throughout the whole season, in my eyes. But there were times when he would score a fantastic goal and instead of running off to celebrate, he would stop for a moment. You know, he'd point up to the sky and thank whoever he was thanking. But, he is a true sportsman in the sense that he was a good role model to the youngsters. He doesn't really play dirty. He was respectful of other players and the referee. And I think I wish in football there were a lot more people and players that played like him, really.
He's definitely someone that deserves the credit he gets, not just for what he does on the pitch, but like you said, what he does off the pitch and being that humble guy he is. I think it's amazing to see that because football gets a lot of criticism and it probably deserves it, actually, I'd say, for being quite, well, I don't know how to phrase it, but quite pathetic in some ways. You know, people can get flicked on and they'll fall to the ground faking a broken arm, but it's nice to see that there are players out there still that play the game for the love of it, not to just be an idiot.
Definitely. I watched Egypt play last night, actually, because
against Russia,
yeah, and thankfully Mo Salah scored in a penalty, but there was a big pre-match build-up, as there always is for football. And I was watching a little bit of it while I was eating my dinner, and they were talking about where Mo Salah had come from in this little village or town in the middle of nowhere in Egypt. And they were saying he was travelling like 13, 14 hours just to get to Cairo to play football and come back. And they showed clips of this village and what it's like now. And again, going back to what we were saying earlier about what we've got compared to a lot of other places in the world, you know, all the streets are like rubble, and they've, you know, to go from that to what he is now is incredible. He's, you know, he had essentially nothing and who's gone to being one of the most successful footballers in the Premier League this year, I think the fact that he's kept humble throughout all of that as well, he's not let any of it go to his head and stuck to his roots, and he's done things for his local village and he's brought that up with him, is awesome. He's a wicked man. I love him.
That's the sort of difference you get between those sorts of players, you know, the African ones, the South American ones. They are all, I'd say they're a lot more humble than European players because they've had to work for it. They've really had to make sacrifices and dig in to get where they are. Whereas, you know, a lot of European players, they might come from private schools. They've just been had it given to them all their life. And I think that's why, for me personally, you know, these sorts of players like Salah and I've mentioned like Drogba, they are the most humble players out there because they've come from nothing to get to where they are.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking about players that come from nothing, we used to play for a football club, right?
Yeah.
I'm joking, of course. But we did play for Coldash, which is like a little town up the road from us. I played for only for a year for them, but you'd played for quite a while, was it?
I did two or three seasons, I think. But I played for Thatcham Town for many years before that.
So you've played football for a lot of your youth then?
Yeah, it was always, you know, something I did as a kid. I mean, football's always been in my life. You know, I had my first football shirt when I was 18 months old, sort of never really had a choice. I'm not complaining. You know, I love the sport. But at times I don't when, you know, it gets bad press, which it deserves. But yeah it's always been a massive part of my life.
It's nice that you acknowledge that as well, because you're right. Like there are a lot of things in that happen in football that aren't so ideal and don't reflect well on the sport. Going back to your time in your youth though, when you were playing football, what's one of your fondest memories from when you were a child? Is it football related, or have you got?
Yeah, I'd probably say it was. You know, you make a lot of different friends from it. You know, you get to mingle with others. You know, that, I mean, I've always, like we mentioned earlier, I've always been quite a competitive person, so that always helped with the competitive part of me. And it was always just, you know, good to get out and exercise, and kept me going and gave me a lot of things to do. So, you know, football, yeah, I don't know what I would have done without playing football when I was a kid. I mean, I never took it seriously. It was always, you know, something fun for me. And I mean, that's why I stopped it. It got too serious and I'd say too competitive, because I'm a competitive person. But, you know, I did it to enjoy it, and it became not enjoyable for me anymore. So I definitely made the right call by stopping. But yeah, it's just, it was massive in my childhood, and it was something I would never regret, and I'd love to, you know, keep doing it, but it's just not for me.
Did you stop it after the same season as myself?
I think so. I might have done one more, but it probably was the same one.
I remember, similarly to what you were saying now, I had a really good time playing football for that season, especially, and I was very grateful that they'd had me, considering I'd never played for a football team prior to that. But I did find it incredibly competitive, considering how crap we were, really. And we did play well as a team. And I have this memory of when we'd come off game after game, and our manager would be like, "Oh, you know, you played really well. You know, you deserved it." But we still lost, and there was nothing he could sort of say to really.
I always struggled with him for that reason.
Turn that around. But you're right, like it was as competitive as we both are. To say that it got a bit too competitive is probably, you know, that's a sure sign that it's a bit too much, considering it's supposed to be a bit of fun.
Yeah, it was always for me, it was just getting out there with friends and trying to enjoy it. Coldash was good for me because I left Thatcham knowing all the team. I went to Coldash knowing no one. You know, I went into that team with no friends, and you know, came out with a lot more, which was nice for me. When you joined the team, I think I asked you to join, which you already knew a few others, didn't you?
Yeah,
already,
I knew one or two from the team already,
which was helpful for yourself. But yeah, it was nice to you know, train once a week and get out and have a game once a week as well. But yeah, it was just the time was right when I did stop.
Brilliant. Well, I think on that note, we've sort of come full circle. We started at football, we finished at football. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Matt.
Thank you
for coming on the podcast. And
thanks for
having always, me. It's so nice to have these conversations with my friends, to find out things that I never knew about you guys, and to actually delve into some of the conversations that we wouldn't have the excuse to do otherwise. So thank you so much for coming over and having the conversation. Just before we sign off, I'm curious, how did you find coming over and talking on the podcast?
Well, I mean, talking football comes easy to me, so it wasn't as scary as I was expecting. I enjoyed it. I've listened to the ones that you put out so far, and it's quite easy just to listen to you both, so hopefully it's the same this time.
Awesome. Well, it certainly has been easy talking to you now, and hopefully it comes across, but I'm glad that your nerves were settled and that you actually enjoyed it, because I find it incredibly almost cathartic just sort of chatting away for an hour and forgetting about everything else that's going on. So thank you for being here and allowing me to do that. It's been a pleasure. So thank you all for listening and sticking around if you've made it this far, and hope to have you around next time on the next episode. Take care of yourselves.